Welcome to Voicing Our Values, a series of podcasts about progressive message framing. This is the second segment entitled Five Basic Rules of Persuasion. I'm Bernie Horn, the Senior Director for Policy and Communications at the Public Leadership Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that seeks to help progressive lawmakers and advocates, particularly at the state and local levels of government. Please take some time to look around our website, www.publicleadershipinstitute.org. In addition to the Voicing Our Values Messaging Handbook, you'll find the Progressive Agenda, which contains hundreds of policy ideas and more than 150 model bills, our handbook for policy advocates called Preparing to Win, and much more. Our last podcast explained that there is one cognitive bias that's particularly important to understand if we're to be successful in politics. It's confirmation bias. This is when people seek out information that conforms to what we already believe or want to believe, while inside their minds, they ignore or refute information that disproves their assumptions. It's a selective use of evidence in which people reinforce to themselves whatever they want to believe. Because of confirmation bias, when people have to choose between new facts and pre-existing beliefs, they will almost always reject the facts and hold on to beliefs. As a result, in an argument, whenever you directly attack your listener's pre-existing beliefs, that listener simply rejects whatever you're saying. Your attempt at persuasion fails. In short, there are tremendous barriers in the path of persuasion. How do we work around these obstacles? First, understand that it's the avid partisans who are so locked into confirmation bias and therefore so very hard to persuade. But among less partisan, persuadable Americans, confirmation bias can be overcome. These swing voters don't lack political beliefs, biases, and stereotypes. Rather, they carry in their minds both progressive and conservative ideas and can be persuaded by either. In addition, because they don't hold their beliefs with the intensity of partisans, they don't feel as much emotional need to defend them. That presents us with a golden opportunity for persuasion. If only policymakers, advocates, and activists understand these Americans, because they're not like us. Progressive activists and advocates. We know a great deal about issues, and we tend to pick our favored candidates based on the policies they trumpet. When progressives talk to each other about politics, we assume our listener knows and cares quite a lot. Persuadables, in contrast, don't pay much attention to public policy. They don't often read or watch the political news. As a result, they're the citizens who tend to know the least about issues, legislation, and the political process. And as polls have consistently shown, they care the least too. Therefore, progressives' other problem in persuasion is that we tend to talk to swing voters the same way we talk to each other. We assume these voters know what we know, think the way we think, and are persuaded by the facts and arguments that persuade us. That simply isn't true and doesn't work. If you are to persuade undecided Americans, the most important thing to understand is that when they are considering political candidates and causes, there's one overriding but vague question in their minds, and it is, who is on my side? That's the fundamental element of persuasion. And since you cannot change people's beliefs, you must use beliefs already in their minds to persuade them that you're on their side. Here are five basic rules to help you accomplish that. Rule number one, begin in agreement and stay in agreement. This is a very old rule of persuasion. 80 years ago, Dale Carnegie explained it in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Here's a quote. In talking to people, don't begin by discussing the things on which you differ. Begin by emphasizing and keep on emphasizing the things on which you agree. Keep emphasizing, if possible, that you are both striving for the same end and that your only difference is one of method and not of purpose. So, start every argument from a point of agreement and then give your audience a bridge from their preconceptions to your solutions. The goal is not to change people's minds. It's to show your listeners that they agree with you already. In order to make a progressive argument, we virtually always have to get past the brain's instantaneous emotion-based system and engage a person's rational, thoughtful brain system. You need your listeners' minds to reflect on your argument, not to react to it. When you begin an agreement, it both demonstrates that you're on the same side, and it helps your audience listen with the common rational aspects of their minds. Finding a point of agreement is not so difficult. You can start by identifying a fairly universally accepted problem, like prescription drugs cost too much, or empathizing with your listeners' concerns. You're right to be worried about the environmental impact of this proposed new bridge, or by stating a policy ideal. Every child in our city should have access to world-class public schools. You never have to compromise your political principles to begin an agreement. You just need to consider a wider range of possibilities than you might normally use. For example, if your listener is complaining about taxes, even in a conservative fashion, you can start by agreeing that our tax system is unfair. If your audience is worried about government budgets, even when they're not a current problem, you can agree that our government has an obligation to be careful with taxpayer money. If someone's concerned about crime, even if it seems like a low-crime neighborhood, you can agree that personal safety must be a top priority of government. If an individual thinks the neighborhood's going downhill, even if it doesn't seem like that to you, just agree that we need to preserve the quality of life. When you give a speech, find out ahead of time what concerns your audience. When you're in a conversation, listen carefully to what others say. They'll provide you with opportunities to agree. Skip the parts where you flatly disagree and steer the conversation toward the elements where you're on the same side. Repeat over and over again that you understand the problem, you empathize with your audience, and you share the same policy ideals. Now, you may wonder, where do I take the discussion from there? What about facts and statistics? What about our progressive solutions? For example, let's say that you're talking about making taxes more progressive, right? Start an agreement like this. Our tax system is unfair. The tax burden on working families has increased while rich people and powerful corporations pocket more and more tax giveaways, and that's unjust. So you start that way. Almost nobody disagrees with that. Then you might provide a statistic, or better yet, a story that illustrates the issue and finish with a very brief explanation of how your policy is consistent with those statements of shared belief and how it addresses the problem. Whatever you say, never say, and try to avoid even implying, that the listeners are wrong. Your audience will stop listening. Similarly, never let your own emotions do the talking. When you're about to speak in anger, take a deep breath and shake it off. Voicing your emotions will make you feel good. You'll get a shot of dopamine in your brain, but it will almost certainly end your opportunity to persuade. Now, rule number two, use progressive values. Now, values are words with positive meanings built into them. Words like trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, from the Boy Scouts, are values that describe personal behavior. But more than that, they implicitly communicate that the behavior is admirable. You could describe the same conduct as brave or foolhardy. You could call a person thrifty or penny-pinching. By choosing to use the value brave over foolhardy or thrifty over penny pinching, you're framing the behavior as positive. In politics, values are ideals that describe the kind of society we're trying to build. When you use progressive values, you communicate two things. First, because values are by definition beliefs that we share with our listeners, you're starting and staying in agreement with your audience. Values suggest that whatever the specific policy, your overall goals are the same. Second, if you understand how to use them, progressive values will allow you to describe a consistent political philosophy, using concepts that every voter can grasp. The stereotypical conservative values are small government, low taxes, free markets, strong military, traditional values. These few words do a pretty good job of laying out a popular philosophy. When conservative values are stated that way, our side too often has no effective response. Progressives usually want to answer the conservative approach not with our own values, but with a laundry list of policies. Or, when we use values, we tend to evoke negative stereotypes about bleeding heart liberals, our compassion, cooperation, concern for our fellow citizens, and these may appeal to our base, but they do not persuade the undecided Americans. There is another way. It's a set of political values that are poll-tested and proven to work. When you're talking about an issue where government has no proper role, like free speech, privacy, reproductive rights, or religion, declare your commitment to freedom, or to a similar value that you'll find on a chart on page 15 of our book, Voicing Our Values. There's a whole variety of choices that mean the same thing as freedom. When you discuss an issue where government should act as a referee between competing interests, like court proceedings, wages, benefits, subsidies, taxes, or education, explain that your position is based on opportunity or a value from that column, words that mean opportunity or equal opportunity. When you argue about an issue where government should act as a protector, like crime, retirement, healthcare, zoning, or the environment, stand for security or words that fit into that column. Moreover, you can pull these values together and explain what you stand for. And that's freedom, opportunity, and security for all. This phrase polls better than conservative values, and more important, it's an accurate description of what we stand for. The right wing favors these principles, but only for some. The affluent, generally. Progressives insist on providing freedom, opportunity, security to each and every American. That's what makes us different. Imagine you're a state legislator visiting constituents door to door, and you're asked what you're going to do to clean up the stream that runs through a particular neighborhood. And cleaning up that stream is not really the state legislator's job. A typical progressive might launch into an explanation of the clean water legislation he or she supports. A particularly inept one might say that stream's the responsibility of the city or county, and there's little that the state can do. A good communicator would start an agreement, something like this. It's a terrible shame that our stream has deteriorated like that. It's unsafe, it's unhealthy, it's wrong for our community. Now, why? The only way to connect with this resident is to agree wholeheartedly. Note that you should call it our stream and our community, even if you live in a different neighborhood. If you can, go on to say you remember what the stream was like when it was clean and beautiful. Then describe your positive values, your goals. Something like this. I believe the state needs to make it a top priority to ensure cleaner streams and safer parklands. We need to protect the quality of life in our community. So why? These are values that you share with every voter. Cleaner, safer, better quality of life. At this point, you're welcome to explain your clean water legislation, but keep it simple. You've probably already won a friend. The average voter is really only listening for one thing. Are you on my side? By using values that you share with your listener, you demonstrate that you are. And you are! Every time you have the opportunity to speak to a persuadable audience, don't forget to express your values. Even if the listener grumbles about your political solution, you might very well win his or her support if you've made it clear that you share the same concerns and are trying to achieve the same goals. Rule number 3, show listeners how they benefit. Progressives favor policies that benefit society at large. We want to help the underdog. We wish that a majority of Americans were persuaded, as we are, by appeals to the common good. But they aren't. In fact, it's quite difficult to convince average citizens to support a policy that appears to benefit people other than themselves or their families and their friends. Celinda Lake, one of our movement's very best pollsters, explains that, quote, our culture is very, very individualistic. When faced with a proposed government policy, people look for themselves in the proposal. People want to know what the proposal will do for me and to me, unquote. That means whenever possible, you need to show voters that they personally benefit from your progressive policies. And usually that's not so hard. When talking about climate change, emphasize how it affects listeners' children and grandchildren. When arguing for criminal justice reform, show how it makes us all safer. Sometimes it's more of a challenge. For example, if you're arguing for programs that benefit people in poverty, don't focus on the way that your proposal directly helps the poor. Instead, find a way that it indirectly benefits the middle class. Persuadable voters are rarely in poverty themselves, and they will relate better to an argument aimed at them. For example, if you're arguing for an increase in the minimum wage, something like this, raising the minimum wage puts money in the pockets of hardworking Americans who will spend it on the things that they need. This, in turn, generates business for the economy and eases the burden on taxpayer-funded services. It's a win-win. Raising the minimum wage helps build an economy that works for everyone. Again, why do we say it that way? Every progressive policy benefits the middle class, often directly, but at least indirectly. In contrast, nearly every right-wing policy hurts the middle class, even if it more directly hurts the poor. Since persuadable voters are nearly always in the middle class, and they want to know how policies affect them personally, you must tell them. That doesn't mean that you can explain your positions without mentioning program beneficiaries. In fact, the example that I just gave mentions them. The important thing is to connect with persuadable voters and frame the beneficiaries in one way or another as deserving. Americans are not very kind to the poor. Outside of the progressive base, a lot of voters assume that people in poverty fail to help themselves, and they should, quote, pull themselves up by their bootstraps, unquote. Unfortunately, you can't argue people out of this belief. So when you talk about lower-income Americans, you need to go out of your way to describe them as deserving. The people you seek to help, quote, work hard and play by the rules, as Bill Clinton used to put it. By telling Americans how a policy benefits them, you're once again staying in agreement and demonstrating that you're on their side. Now, rule number 4, use their language, not ours. Since persuadable Americans don't pay much attention to politics, they know very little about issues and ideologies. After all, with America's highly polarized parties, anyone who pays attention has probably already taken a side. In talking to our less politically aware fellow citizens, progressive policymakers and advocates tend to make 2 mistakes. First, progressives often use insider language instead of plain English. Policymakers and advocates tend to speak the technical language of lobbying and carry on a never-ending conversation about bills from the past, measures under consideration, and current law. you probably realize that most Americans don't know anything about CBO scoring or third reader or the Rules Committee. But average voters also don't know an amendment from a filibuster. Insiders tend to use abbreviations freely, like ENDA for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or TABOR for describing the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and they refer to like SB 234 or PAYGO requirements or the Ag Community or the Hyde Amendment. You know, it's a tough habit to break. In fact, insider jargon serves a useful purpose. It's shorthand that allows those who understand to communicate more efficiently. But it's also means to be exclusive, to separate members from non-members of the insider club. And that's exactly why such language is pernicious. You can't expect persuadable voters to understand a language that was designed in part to exclude them. Second, progressives often use ideological language, even though persuadables are the opposite of ideologues. You should not complain of corporate greed because persuadable Americans don't have a problem with corporations. You shouldn't say capitalism or any ism at all because most Americans don't relate to ideology. And don't say like neo or crypto anything. Like technical policy language, ideological language is a form of shorthand. But to persuadable voters, this just sounds like the speaker isn't one of them. You need to accept persuadables as they are, not as you wish they were. They don't know what you know, and yet if you use language they understand, you have the upper hand in any argument. Progressive policies benefit nearly all Americans. Progressive values reflect the aspirations of the vast majority of our fellow citizens. You're on the voter's side. You just need to speak in a way that communicates it. And now rule number 5, focus on arguments, not facts. Progressives embrace facts, the more the better. And that's important in governing, but less effective in persuasion. Advocates will pack a speech with alarming facts and figures, like 30 million Americans are uninsured, or 1 in 5 children live in poverty, or 32 million Americans have been victims of racial profiling. When you speak that way, you're assuming that the listener would be persuaded, and policy would change if only everybody knew what you know. But that's not how it works. Politics is not a battle of information. It's a battle of ideas. Facts by themselves don't persuade. Statistics, especially, must be used sparingly, or listeners will just go away confused. Your argument should be built upon ideas and values that the persuadable voter already holds dear. If you're addressing an audience, a few well-placed facts may help illustrate why the progressive solution's essential, while too many facts will diminish the effectiveness of your argument. If you're speaking one-on-one or in a small group, let your listeners ask for more facts. When people do that, they're helping you persuade them. Stories are usually more persuasive than statistics. Humans are much more comfortable and familiar with learning lessons from stories. The Bible's full of stories. As children, we learn from fairy tales and mythology. Much of the news is delivered through anecdotes. Our hearts are always ready to embrace a hero or turn against a villain. So let me finish this segment with a couple of examples of bad messaging. Okay, don't say the following. Taxes are the dues we pay for civilized society. Our economic problem is not taxes, it's corporate greed. The average pay of CEOs has risen 800% over the past 20 years, while the percentage corporations pay in taxes has declined by 40%. But that shouldn't surprise us. Maximizing wealth is the whole point of capitalism. Okay, that's one example. Here's another bad messaging. Almost 6 in 10 high school graduates go on to college. But according to a new study, 18% never finish college because they can't afford tuition, the cost of which has increased 3 times faster than inflation over the past 20 years. The Miller bill would help, but it's stuck in filibuster in the Senate. We need you to call targeted senators and demand that they vote for cloture. Okay, well, it was kind of obvious that, you know, I overdid it with the numbers and the ideological language there, but I think you get it. These narratives that I just gave, they don't start in agreement. They don't use values. They use ideological and insider language, and they greatly overuse statistics. Although they violate every rule of persuasion, these examples aren't too far removed from the way progressives talk every day. Keep in mind that in politics, our goal is not to educate Americans. It's to persuade them to do something, to vote, to volunteer, to contribute. If you vote for our ballot measure or send the letter we want you to send to a legislator, it doesn't really matter if the facts in this person's head are different from the ones that are in ours. The goal in politics is not to change people's beliefs, which is nearly impossible. It's to get people to take action on our behalf. To persuade, you need to understand your audience's preconceptions and where you share common ground. Avoid triggering negative emotional reactions and confirmation bias. Start from a point of agreement and provide voters with a bridge from their preconceptions to your solutions. Show that your policies are consistent with values that they already hold dear and explain how they benefit. In sum, remind them over and over again that you are on their side. In future podcasts, we'll show how to use these five basic rules of persuasion to debate a wide variety of issues. In the meantime, do us a favor and recommend the Voicing Our Values series of podcasts to your friends. Best to you.